Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the No Nonsense of Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Matthias Wadner, along with my co-host, Will Lomas, as always. And we are back to recap yet another Titans win as they move to 6-3 after taking down the Denver Broncos. But before we talk about that game and kind of recap what happened, what went right, what went wrong, I want to talk a little bit about this Caleb Farley thing because we got a rap sheet report earlier today that Caleb Farley suffered a disc injury on Sunday. And he's having more tests to determine how significant it is and how much time he'll miss. Noted expert Dr. Robert Watkins is expected to weigh in on Farley. Obviously, not great news. It's not a huge blow to the team because he really wasn't playing at all. I'm actually surprised he even got injured in this game because what was he playing? Special teams only, right? I don't think I saw him for – if he did play on defense, I really didn't see him for too many snaps. But I think it's more concerning long-term because a disc injury means probably a neck, back type of thing. And he already had that neck thing coming out of college. And it was the biggest reason why he even fell in the draft. So, man, it's just this dude can't get healthy. And it's really frustrating. But aside from that, I think a lot of people are pointing the finger at John Robinson right now because he took the gamble on Caleb Farley, a falling Caleb Farley in the draft, who, by all accounts, his talent said he was a top 10, top 15 type of player in the draft. He hasn't shown that in his career, but it's fair to question whether a lot of that was due to injuries, and now you're piling this one on top of him, on top of it. And John Robinson is kind of in the crosshairs right now because he has taken gambles on some injured players. It's worked out amazing with Jeffrey Simmons. It hasn't worked out with Caleb Farley. But what do you think of this situation? What do you think about the blame that's going around to John Robinson? And what do you think about Farley's immediate and long-term future?
Yeah, so let's start with the Farley stuff first. Like, the short term, like, I think he goes on IR, and I think they, you know, fully put him in the back burner, and then anything you get from him from here on out is gravy. Like, I think that's just how you treat it, is like, you're not calling him a lost cause, but it's basically like, you need to get healthy, and then you need to come out and play up to your athleticism and your, you know, your talent, and, you know, if you're good, awesome. Like, we'll find a spot for you. We're the most injured team in NFL history. We'll always need more corners. But if not, I mean, it just is what it is. The evaluation, so the, like, 2020 and 2021, right? Like, the COVID affected years where you couldn't get, like, two back to back years with, like, solid, like, production and tape on all those guys. You know, I think there's a lot of good, interesting, like, players from those classes. Like, you know, Rashad Weaver, like, we don't give a lot of credit for the 2021 draft class having him. And then Monty Rice has looked solid. Molden's been good. Like, all that kind of stuff. But those were two that didn't really follow a lot of the same tendencies, especially the 2021 draft, because really what Robinson had looked for historically is with their first two picks, or their first and their second round picks specifically, was long-term production, SEC players, like high character guys who could play in the run and the pass, like regardless of what position it was, like those are pretty much John Robinson things. Like, you can go back to the 2018 class. So you have Rashawn Evans, like, was that guy. Harold Landry was different. Like, he was another guy who was, you know, if we want to talk about injury swings, like, that's one reason he was available in the second round was because of injuries. But, you know, he's been great for the Titans up until this year. But then after that, it was Jeffrey Simmons, A.J. Brown, both long-term SEC starters. Then it was Isaiah Wilson, Christian Fulton. Isaiah Wilson sucks. Christian Fulton's awesome. Then it was the 2021 year with Caleb Farley and Dylan Raidens. And then last year it was Treylon Burks and Roger McCreary, SEC guys, like long-term starter. So he has a type. And the 2021 class was obviously the biggest detour, whatever you want to call it. Like, when you look at all the draft classes, that's the one that looks the weirdest, just in terms of tendencies and all that. So, you know, like, Caleb Farley is such a weird person to, like, talk about, because we don't really know what he ever was as a corner, right? So in college, he switched from wide receiver to corner. Like, the one year he started, he was great. I mean, like, super fast, long, makeup speed, and he was sort of a raw developmental guy. And at the time, you draft him as the same reason you drafted Jeffrey Simmons when you had DaQuan Jones and Jarrell Casey, is you've got guys who are supposed to be the starters. Like, you've got Jackrabbit Jenkins and you've got Christian Fulton, and then you're going to have him replace one of those guys later. Same thing they did with Harold Landry when he was behind Arakpo and Morgan and all that. So that's the thought process. And it's just, you're swinging on a guy who, if he's healthy, he's a top 10 pick. If he's not, he's not. And again, it goes back to the medical staff, and there was a big deal made about, well, his medicals, you know, teams aren't clear on him. Some teams have him as off the board in the first round, and some teams still have him as a top 15 pick, blah, 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 blah. Well, the Titans are one of the few teams that actually got their hands on him at the combine. Like, they talked about it after they drafted him, is specifically John Robinson and the medical staff wanted to work with him directly. And so in that 2021 pre-draft process, it was sort of a free-for-all, and you could, if you could get your hands on a guy and grab him and pull him into an exam room, you could basically, like, do your own medical evaluation and then share your results. So once again, it's a weird pick just in general. Just I say a weird pick, it's an out of character pick to pick somebody not from the SEC, like, and not a long-term starter. But, you know, I can understand sort of why he did that, because the last time he did that, it was Isaiah Wilson and he was terrible. And the time before that, it was Jeffrey Simmons. So if you kind of mix those two profiles together, where it's like, well, the last time I drafted somebody who was injured and who had high upside, it actually worked out better for me. So maybe I can steer outside of the SEC. Okay. If you look at it like that, then you look at Farley and it's like, okay, the medical staff that's produced the two most injured rosters in the NFL over the last 2 years cleared him. If a competent medical staff cleared him, would he still be, you know, a bust? And that's kind of where we are, because I don't know. I mean, when you draft it where the Titans are going to draft from here on, I mean, like, from where the, you know, when you're drafting in the 20s every draft, there's not a lot of guys that are just sitting there that are no-brainers. And, you know, that's a good thing, because you don't want to be with the no-brainers up top, because that means you're a bad team. But it all, you know, there's a lot of picks. You look at, I mean, I don't need to go through all the drafts and every team that hadn't hit on a pick in the 20s, but this is more common. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, just to touch on that a little bit, like, imagine if they drafted Bateman, which was a player that a lot of Titans fans wanted. Bateman is dealing with injury after injury. He just had a season cut short with a foot injury, has never reached his potential through two seasons. What would we be saying? We'd be saying the same exact thing about John Robinson. All these people would. So I also don't really think that it's a fair argument, because it's not like he's like willingly drafting players who have extensive injury histories. Like people are going to point to Burks and Phillips. No, they weren't injured in college. They were fine. But they get to the tight ends, and they're starting to have injury problems. Yes, Farley and Simmons came in with injury histories, but Simmons has been an outstanding success. Farley has it. The draft is like 50-50 on most picks, and he just took gambles. This one didn't work out. A lot of the other ones have worked out. And a lot of these other players who he's drafted that have gotten injured, you have to point at the medical staff, because it's not only the rookies that are getting injured, everyone's getting injured.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, like, you know, you look at starting in the 20s in that draft class. So it's like Kadarius Toney, he's already on a different team. Kwity Paye, he was a freak coming out, but he's been injured the last 2 years. Caleb Farley, injured the last 2 years. Christian Darrisaw, injured his rookie year. Najee Harris, they weren't going to draft a running back in the first round. Travis Etienne, hurt his entire rookie year. Greg Newsome, I actually don't have any idea if he's been hurt or not. But then it's like Rashad Bateman, injured. I mean, it's just like, you know, in one of the most injury-riddled classes, they just drafted an injured, like, they just drafted one of the guys who were injured. Like, I mean, it sucks. You don't want it to happen. But at the same time, it's, you know, there's not really a knock-it-out-of-the-park kind of player that was there in that class that made sense for them at that position. I mean, like, we even talked about how we didn't really, like, Elijah Moore was the guy who I think everybody, at least on our podcast, wanted. Like, you know, Luke, I think I had Luke on board with him. It's like he was a two-time SEC, like, starter. But the problem was he was, I believe he was a little bit smaller than A.J. Brown. I mean, I don't believe he's a little bit smaller than A.J. Brown. And he was kind of like, with A.J. Brown, you could project maybe he starts in the slot and you move him outside later in his career and he just was better than advertised. I think Elijah Moore is more of a slot guy in the NFL, and he's already, you know, not content with a good New York Jets team and wants to be traded out of there. So I think there's a good chance that they talked to him and didn't like him in interviews and passed on him for that reason. So I don't know. Like, the best picks in that range are like Christian Barmore, who went in the top of the second round, like, I mean, maybe Tyson Campbell, but I think he had some character stuff. Like, that, it's just, you know, it's just one of those classes where there's not a clear, this is the guy you should have drafted. And again, I would say that anybody who comes to the Titans is just, I'm assuming they're going to miss six games. So even if somebody started 17 games as a rookie for their team, just imagine that they missed at least six games and went on IR last year with the Titans, just because that's what everybody did. But, you know, it sucks because we're in this place right now where people want to, for some reason, there's this glorification of Mike Vrabel because he's toughing it out and he's making all these pieces work, despite the fact that he's the only reason why Todd Downing is with the team. Like, you know, Mike Vrabel gets all the credit for shooting himself in the foot, and that's cool.
You're absolutely right. And I was going to bring it up as soon as you had finished your point. I was going to bring up this Greg Rosenthal tweet that he says is a pro Vrabel tweet. He tweeted out today, the Titans are routinely down seven starters, ranked 32nd in yards per drive, and have gained more yards than their opponent once this year. They are 6-3. How is that a pro Mike Vrabel tweet? Like, I think both of us are aware and we agree that Mike Vrabel is a good to very good head coach, but he has a lot of flaws, and a lot of them come from just being blatantly loyal to bad coaches. And one of them right now, you just mentioned it, Todd Downing. And the other one, his medical / strength and conditioning staff, which is literally setting historic records of injured players, and it can't possibly be that it's the front office's fault for getting these guys in. It's not their fault. Yeah. And I mean, the Todd Downing thing, I don't even want to talk about it anymore, because every single week it's the same thing and nothing is going to change. And Mike Vrabel isn't going to change anything because he's just blatantly loyal to him. I think even Paul Kaharsky kind of called him out on it today. I can't remember what the exact quote
from Vrabel was. That's part of the stop the nonsense. So we'll get to that later.
We'll table that. But yeah. It's like very clear that I think Vrabel sees the issue, but for whatever reason, he just does not want to make an abrupt change to what he believes and what technically is working because they're winning games, but you're not winning the Super Bowl with this offensive coordinator and this offense. And it's so weird that I understand the praise for Mike Vrabel because I do think that the tight ends are outplaying their limitations, but a lot of people act like this team is not talented. This team is extremely talented. This is a really good roster. We talked about it in the preseason, in the offseason, that we thought they had depth at almost every single position on both offense and defense, and that this was the most talented rosters that they've ever had. And what happens? They're all injured. They're all injured or limited by their offensive coordinator.
Yeah. And they played their 70th player on Sunday, which leads the league. Of course it does. But, like, they played their 70th player on Sunday, which is so aggravating. And, look, like you just said, you know, it's not even – I'm trying to put this in a way that we haven't necessarily said it before. So, going back to the whole – it's a, like, there's no talent on this team. It's like they've got Denico Autry, who has 7.5 sacks and has had 10 sack seasons before this year. He's not some revelation. He's a 32-year-old who's been in the league for a decade. Like, he's not some revelation that this staff just created out of nowhere. He's a good player, and he's being used correctly by Shane Bowen, but that's not it. They're not making something out of nothing, you know? So that's great. They have Jeffrey Simmons, who's they didn't have him on Sunday, but they've had him the rest of the season, and he's probably the best defensive tackle in the NFL. Like, I mean, Aaron Donald probably gets that nod, but just when you watch on a play-to-play basis, like, I don't know that there's anybody who's as good and gives as much effort and does as many things as Jeffrey Simmons. You know, maybe you like chocolate, maybe you like vanilla, whatever, but for my money, I would have Jeffrey Simmons. So, and he has 5.5 sacks. And then, you know, Rashad Weaver has 5.5 sacks. You know, he was a 4th-round pick, but, you know, he's a guy that has looked good. It looked like a steal when he was drafted in the preseason. It looks like the same exact guy now, except he's healthy enough to play, and he's doing good things. You know, Bud Dupree is averaging a sack a game when he plays. So, you know, and this is not a kick Mike Vrabel thing, but you also have David Long, who Mike Vrabel refused to play until he was forced to play. Like, we've talked about that before. Like, he tried to play Christian Fulton in the slot, even though he's not a slot corner. Like, he gets so much credit for almost ruining things. And look, like you said, he's a good coach, but the problem is the coaching staff that this team had in 2020 should have won a Super Bowl. But the problem is that Shane Bowen wasn't allowed to call the plays, and they had one of the worst defenses in NFL history on third downs, historically bad. And maybe some of that was player. A lot of it was bad coaching and cushions everywhere and just you know, three-man rushes, just bad play calling. And, you know, it's come out that Mike Vrabel was either calling the plays or was heavily involved in the game plans, but it looked completely different than it has with Shane Bowen the last 2 years, like this year and last year. So if you had this defense or this defensive coaching with Arthur Smith's offense, with all the talent that was on those rosters, that is the team that should have, you know, gone far and gone to the AFC Championship and, you know, seen what they did there, but they didn't. And then now where Arthur Smith is in Atlanta, and for whatever reason, Mike Vrabel's dying on the hill that Todd Downing's his man. And it's just, it's all frustrating. I'll talk more about Todd Downing later, but because I don't even know why this sentiment is still here. Like, the Titans are 6-1 in their last 7 games. Like, they've done it with a very conservative offense and an aggressive defense that wins with four rushers and complicated coverage on the back end, but really just sound football. Like, they are the team that they were last year, you know, except they've been injured and they've had injuries to Tannehill and haven't, you know, been able to put up quite as many points, which is crazy to say. But, you know, this is who this team is. So I don't know why there's all this vitriol now of like, oh, you know, it's, you know, because it's not, it's making me mad thinking about it. Should be equal parts credit and blame for Vrabel and Robinson. But instead, it's all these people who want to just, you know, quote tweet and say like, oh, Mike Vrabel, coach of the year, anytime the Titans win. And then like, how do they win? It's like, well, they gave it to Derrick Henry 20 times and he got 2 yards per carry. And then Tannehill kind of bailed him out and hit harder passes and, you know, made the offense work. And, you know, they ended up scoring enough points, even though there were some really dumb play calls. And everybody's like, wow, Mike Vrabel, what a coach. And it's like, no, like, he's doing the same thing. And then basically he puts everything on Ryan Tannehill in the fourth quarter and in 2 minutes, like, that's why it's so important to have Tannehill back. And maybe we'll talk about this in a second too, but the 2 minute drill before halftime where the Titans went down and scored, like, that's why Tannehill's important, because when he can call his own plays and go hurry up and do all that kind of stuff, you know, when he has more control over the offense and can be more aggressive, that's where you get 7 points. And those 7 points there are the difference between winning the game and losing the game.
Yeah, we will talk about the Broncos game. Well, we can just talk about it right now. But the last point I want to make on all that is you kind of nailed it. What we want is equal for John Robinson and Mike Vrabel to equally get praise because they both deserve it, and then equally get blamed when they do deserve it. But it's just never that way. It's so weird that the coach who, you know, still employs Todd Downing and still employs the strength and conditioning staff still always gets the credit, and it's always blaming the front office for a lot of these moves that may or may not pan out. But anyway, let's just put a button on that and talk a little bit about the Broncos game. The Tannehill thing you just mentioned was very interesting because I don't want to go back to the Vrabel thing, but the same thing happened in the Packers game when Rodgers was allowed to go up tempo, and even in that one of those final drives, he was going up tempo, ended up getting them across the field in like, what, 40 seconds or something like that. That's the best he's looked all season. And the same thing with Tannehill. That's the best our offense has looked all season when they've completely taken the play calling out of the play caller's hands. And it happened with Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, which is funny because Mike Vrabel is the one who hired Matt LaFleur to be OC. And that was kind of a disaster also. So, that's just an interesting dynamic. But man, this Broncos game was disgusting. And I think we kind of saw it coming because every Broncos game this season has been tragic, just a complete disaster, just because of the way they play. They have an amazing defense. They're incredibly well schemed and their offense is just terrible. Russell Wilson commits turnovers and he takes sacks. And that's what we saw in this game. And the Titans just, I mean, they started this game so bad, and the offense looked somehow worse than it has for a lot of the games this season. But finally, they end up getting on the board at the end of the first half, and then they just found a way to win this game with a flea flicker to Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, who, hey man, he shut up all of his haters, one of which is me. I was ragging on him because he was like our most targeted player through the first half of this game, and he kept dropping passes. He kept not getting open, which he just can't do. And it took a flea flicker to finally get him some separation, and he came through. And then he came through with another end zone target as well. So shout out to him for getting it done in this game. I still don't think he's a very good receiver, and we probably won't see this ever again. But I'm glad he came through to get us the win, but I don't know. I mean, I left this game happy that they won, but not overly optimistic about them going forward. And that's just kind of what every win has felt like this season.
Yeah. You know, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, like, he was wrong when he said that the wide receivers had made plays and all that after the Chiefs game, but maybe that lit a fire under him, you know, and that's why he did it. It's weird because when you watch the game, I don't know if Derrick Henry was, because we know he had to pee. Like, we've all talked, like, that's been talked about over and over again. I don't know if it was that, or I don't know if it was maybe, like, he was sick and, like, had the flu or something and had to, like, you know, I don't want to speculate any of that kind of stuff, but like maybe he was just sick and that's why he looked. Because I don't have the technology to do it, but if you overlaid the Titans runs versus the Broncos and overlaid it on top of the runs against the Chiefs, like the runs weren't going as far to the outside zone. They were stopping at the B gap before he cut it up. He was hitting them so slow, like. When he was hitting him against Kansas City, it was like he was shot out of a cannon. Like, it was like his feet were rocket. Like, he was hitting it full. Same thing against the Texans. Like, he was hitting the hole full speed, and if it wasn't there, he was making one. Against the Broncos, he was flat-footed a few times and just stopped and, like, kind of tried to half-heartedly cut back and then just kind of went forward for a yard. Like, there was nothing. I don't know if... You know, they asked him if he was hurt. Maybe it was an injury thing. Maybe he was sick. Something was wrong. And I don't know what it was, but that was strange. But that's a big part of why the offense looked different, is because, you know, everybody's pointing to, like, Malik Willis. And it's like, oh, you know, when Malik Willis was in, Derrick Henry averages X amount of yards per carry or whatever. It's like, yeah, but he was also going against the Texans defense, which is the worst in the NFL, and the Chiefs, where he was playing like a man on fire. Like, this was more Derrick Henry not doing his thing more than it was the offensive line not blocking. Not that, I mean, look, I'm never going to say that Dennis Daly is good. So, like, in when you have a line with somebody that bad, you know, you're not going to have a good offensive line. But, I mean, the offensive lineman looked confused at times, too. It was weird. The whole thing was weird. But, you know, in the first half, it was so many dropped passes and so many, like, it was just, like, it looked like the wide receivers didn't want to be there. And it was super cold. I mean, I was at the game. Maybe they just were not excited about going from 80 degrees on Monday to 35 degrees on Sunday. Like, maybe that was the problem, and maybe they just weren't ready for it. But, I mean, the ball was hitting their hands, and they were dropping it. And they didn't look particularly upset or like, hey, I'll get you next time. And luckily, Tannehill just kept believing in Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, because I'm not sure if I would have thrown that pass in Madden that he threw to the corner to NWI, because I don't know what gave him the confidence he was going to be able to pluck that and get his feet down, but he did, and it was huge. You know, that was one of the two touchdowns on the day between the two, so credit to him. But, man, like, that was tough to watch on offense, and I really can't figure out why, other than they were expecting the run game to do more.
Yeah, the run game was awful. I haven't read what you said about people thinking that this was because Tannehill got inserted and Henry was better with Willis. I don't buy that. I mean, Henry had like three straight 100-yard games with Tannehill at quarterback before those two Willis starts. And also he was facing the Houston Texans, who are like a historically bad run defense, and the Chiefs, who have a really bad run defense as well. So, yeah, I don't buy into that at all. I also thought Henry did not look good in this game. I credit the Broncos. I think they played very good defense, and, you know, they just plugged up the holes well. But, yeah, everything looked a little bit slow. I thought Burks looked pretty good on the minimal touches that he was able to corral, and I'd like to see him get more involved. I think he will. He's coming off a long layoff. I'm concerned about Robert Woods. I don't know what's going on. Two targets on seven catches. He had a really big drop on a third down from what I remember. And he just doesn't look the same, man. I don't know if it's the age or the ACL injury from last year, or just like the collective putridity of the offense that's bringing him down, but he is not looking like the Robert Woods that we've come to know as an NFL player. Thankfully, Austin Hooper, every time Hooper gets passes, like, he actually does good things, and he actually comes down with most of the targets. So I'm glad that he's getting involved. They need to get Chig the ball more. The dude is so explosive and such a good tackle breaker after the catch. I don't know how this guy is getting one or two targets a game. It needs to be up to five in every single game, just because he brings to your offense something that nobody else has, and the ability to make plays after the catch. The only other player who could do that is Derrick Henry and Treylon Burks whenever he's healthy, but no one else on the offense can really do that right now. So I don't know why he's not getting more run.
Well, and that goes back to the press conference today where Mike Vrabel was asked, because I tweeted this morning, and I don't know if anybody, you know, that was at the press conference saw it or whatever, but I wrote that there are two tight ends in the NFL with multiple 40-plus yard catches this year. One is T.J. Hockenson, who was a former top 10 pick, and he was a Pro Bowler, and he just got traded for multiple top 100 picks, and he's gotten 62 targets this year. The other one is Chig Okonkwo. He's a rookie, and he's only had 13 targets this year. Like, the cost benefit analysis of throwing the ball to Chig Okonkwo is, it just, do it. Like, he's averaging 20 yards a reception, I think. Like, he's awesome. Like, he's been awesome. He was awesome in camp. He was constantly praised for his work ethic. And then they asked, why don't you get the ball to Chig Okonkwo more? And he says, well, you know, it's not up to us who gets the ball. It's, you know, it's up to the quarterback when he's out there.
I hate that.
Well, not only is that a bad and dumb way to think about the sport of football, but it's also not true. He's never, in his entire NFL career, he's never had a game where he's been on the field for 10 passes. It's nine or less. Like, unless he's pass blocking. I mean, he's never run double-digit routes in a single game. So you've got Jeff Swaim running, you know, 15 routes a game or whatever. And I like Hooper, like, but you've got Hooper running, like, you know, double-digit routes. You've got Cody Hollister. You've got guys that you pick up off the street. All these guys are running double-digit routes. And you're one player who's had multiple 40-yard catches is not involved. It's such a I'm almost cussed. It's such a slap in the face to everybody with two brain cells to rub together to say, well, you know, it's really impossible to say how we could get him the ball more. We're really gonna have to figure it out. I wish we could just crack this code. And it's like, hey, dude, put him on the field for passing downs. That, you know, a great way to get your best receiver the ball, throw it to him. And you know when you have to throw it to him? When it's a passing play. So it's just, it's the drill tweet with the candles. It's like, how do I, you know, somebody please help me fix my budget. It's like, somebody please help me get a more explosive offense. I don't know how to throw the ball. Like, it's mind-numbingly painful to listen. And maybe he's just lying to cover up for Todd Downing. If not, he should be out of the whole, I go to every meeting room and I'm so involved. If you can't comprehend this, you shouldn't be involved in every meeting room. You don't understand what you're looking for. I'm not involved in every doctor's office that I walk to. You know, they don't let me just go back and do things. I'm not qualified to be back there. If you can't figure out guy who catches passes well should be on the field for passes, you're not qualified to be in those meeting rooms. So it is so aggravating to listen to him talk and be so condescending and or so wrong.
Yeah, that is a really frustrating way to look at things. It's not only him. I've seen other coaches do it. And you know what's really funny? This reminds me of Arthur Smith a couple weeks ago from the Mike Vrabel coaching tree. Reporters kept asking him, why is Kyle Pitts not involved in the passing offense? He's your best player. He's your best receiver. And he was pretty much like, this is not fantasy football. We don't decide who gets the ball. That's not how this works. That's not how this works. The Los Angeles Rams, the Los Angeles Rams get the ball to Cooper Kupp in so many different ways. They get him 15 freaking targets a game, even though the defense knows that he is the only player on the Rams offense that could even remotely hurt you. Yet he continues to be game playing the ball. They get ways to get him the ball because he is the best player on their offense, and he's good at everything, including after the catch. This is not difficult, man. I understand football is a complex sport. Absolutely. So many things go into it. There's a defense on the other side that's scheming to take away players, but they can't take away Chigakonkwo if he's not on the field. Like, it doesn't work that way. And it's so frustrating. And I find it funny that Arthur Smith pretty much gave a similar answer to Kyle Pitts, who's is like, he's better than Chigakonkwo. He should be like a top three, top five tight end weapon in the league, but they can't get him going. And I don't know, maybe it's just a Vrabel coaching philosophy thing, but definitely frustrating.
Yeah, that is the Kyle Pitts comparison is one that I had not thought of, but it is really good. Like, you know, that their offense is working and much better than Todd Downing's or whatever. But yeah, you're right. Like, there's no concerted effort to get the ball to specific players. And part of that is because, you know, like Cordarrelle Patterson looks really good. They have Kyle Pitts. They have Drake London. Like, they've got, you know, I think Gage might be on the Buccaneers, but they've got some players. You know, it's not the weakest part of their team, but like, when you're the Titans and it's like, hey, everybody's, because don't even look at it now that Burks is back. Like, Burks and Woods should be a good 1-2 combination. Like, I think it is weird that Woods is not returning kicks too. That, you know, that is a strange thing now that you say that. Like, maybe he is kind of dealing with something, although he hadn't shown up on the injury report, and they're not afraid to put people on the injury report. So I don't know.
He was scaring me a little bit with the punt returns, to be honest with you. I wasn't feeling too – I don't feel confident in any punt return.
Yeah, we've been burned too many times this year. Yeah. Like, you can't fumble, like, in, like, three of your first four games and then also against, like against the Texans. Like, yeah. So I get the take him off if you can, like, and give him more rest. But, yeah, it is interesting that he hadn't had a big impact – hasn't had a big impact since – what was it? Maybe the Raiders game? Maybe it was the Colts game. One of those two games at home. He had a really solid game and helped move the chains and all that. But I mean, this seems to be an offense that's run to the tight ends. Like, there's a lot of passes to the tight ends. Like, cool, which is fine. I don't necessarily mind that. But maybe don't throw it to Jeff Swaim. Maybe throw it to Chigakonkwo and Austin Hooper. And then now you have something interesting. But the smallest level of creativity eludes Todd Downing and the team. And the problem with all that is, look, if Todd Downing can't do it, fine. I understand that. But Mike Vrabel has to see that, and there has to be a change made, because clearly he's over his head as an offensive coordinator. Like, clearly he does not understand what he's doing. There's no flow. He's got no identity. The only identity he has is the one that Mike Vrabel tells him he has. And, you know, it's not working. So he needs somebody else to come in and take that job. But, it, you know, if that happens this year and they say, hey, Todd, you know, we appreciate your service, you can stay if you want, but Tim Kelly's going to be the offensive coordinator, or Frank Reich, or, you know, Nathaniel Hackett, or, you know, any number of guys who should be available this offseason, you know, say like, hey, that we're going to make them the offensive coordinator because we think that they have an actual style that we can build on. Okay, like, I take back all the mean things I'm saying about Mike Vrabel. He's just trying to be a good friend. But that's what I thought last year until they kept Todd Downing again. And this is exactly what we were all afraid of, and it's exactly what's happened. And I'm not – you know what's definitely not going to help? If everybody keeps screaming Coach of the Year Mike Vrabel on Twitter. You know, if everybody keeps screaming how great of a job he's doing when he's not holding the people accountable around him, that's not going to help the situation. So – I mean, we'll see what happens, but it is concerning at a minimum that he's not more frustrated with the offense publicly.
Yeah, I agree. I really don't want to keep talking about this Vrabel thing, but it's just, it's so weird. And if you really think about it, like, The Titans probably should only have one loss. If they had better coaching in the Chiefs and Giants game, they should have won both of those games, right? So it's kind of weird. Like, they shouldn't even be 6-3. They should actually be better than that. And they've won a bunch of close games, and I guess that's a testament to the team, but I don't know. It's all just so weird to me. But as long as the Titans keep winning, I don't care. Anyone could get praise, and that's fine. But I just hope it doesn't rear its ugly head in the playoffs. Let's take a break here, and then we'll come back and break down the Green Bay Packers game.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome back into No Nonsense, the Tennessee Titans podcast. The Titans, now at 6-3, in complete control of the AFC South. Man, the Jaguars lost too, right? I think the Colts are second right now with four wins. Do they have four wins or do they have three? I'm actually not. They have four. They're 4-5-1. Titans are at 6-3. Titans are pretty... Are in control, but the Colts are still kind of hanging around. Now they have some newfound juice with Jeff Saturday after beating the 2-7 Raiders. Congrats to the Colts on that win. Hope it goes great for you this upcoming week against the Eagles. But anyway, the Titans face this week the Green Bay Packers on the road on a short week on Thursday Night Football. In what should be a cold weather game, although that doesn't really affect the Titans. They actually play better in cold weather, it seems. But the Packers are coming off a huge win against the Cowboys, ended up saving their season. I believe they are now, bear with me, I don't know everyone's record, 4-6. Wow, it's crazy that they've lost six games considering they made it pretty far in the, I think they were the one seed last year. And they were supposed to be a Super Bowl contender this year, but it has just not gone well. The offense has been a complete shambles. They really haven't gotten anything going in any game. Aside from this Cowboys game, which is interesting because the Cowboys came in with one of the league's best defenses, but the Packers just kept hitting explosive plays, especially through the air to their rookie Christian Watson. And Aaron Jones got like 30 carries and looked like prime Aaron Jones. So it's possible that the Packers offense has found some mojo and maybe found what works, but the Titans defense is legit, man. Like, I don't even care who's playing. It doesn't even matter at this point. They are playing just so cohesively, and I don't really see the Packers. You remember I think it was a Thursday night game or maybe Sunday night game a couple years ago where the Packers and Devontae Adams went crazy on the Titans defense, scored like 40 points or something in the snow. We're not getting that. This is a different Packers team. Aaron Rodgers has struggled mightily this season, and even though it seems like they may have gotten on track against the Cowboys just a week before that, they scored 9 points against the Lions. So kind of an interesting situation here for the Titans, but when you look at both teams' season as a whole, I feel like the Titans should be a slight favorite, even though it's on the road in Green Bay. I do feel like the Titans are the better team.
Yeah, like, it's really that Packers game was really weird. Like, Christian Watson had 3 touchdowns and went crazy after, you know, an entire season worth of nothing. But the Packers, like, they lost 5 in a row, I believe, heading into that game last night. I think they were 3-1, then they lost 5, and then they won that one in overtime. Like, playing an overtime game is tough. Like, we just saw the ramifications of that for the Titans with how many guys they had to have sit just because it was a lot, you know, it was just a lot for them to deal with. They've already got a lot of guys that they put on injured reserve, so that's not a great plus for them, for the Packers. There's so much, just like last week, what the Titans are on Thursday is a complete mystery. You know, could Jeffrey Simmons play after, you know, a sit and a week out, and, you know, considering he played on essentially the same thing before, like, I don't know, maybe. Could Bud Dupree all of a sudden pop up again and play? Maybe. Could Christian Fulton, like, play after his, you know, were they just being careful with his hamstring against a team that probably wasn't going to pass the ball very effectively? Maybe. You know, how bad is Elijah Molden's re-aggravation of his groin or whatever? Where's Amani Hooker? Like, how's David Long? There's so many different questions on if which one of these guys can come in. Not that it ultimately matters, because the Titans defense, like you said, is playing so well regardless of who's in, but you would rather have your Jeffrey Simmons. You'd rather have Bud Dupree. Like, you'd rather have Amani Hooker. Like, the more of those guys you can get, the better it is for you. But I don't know that the Packers team knows what they want to be. Like, there was some question about whether Aaron Rodgers had a thumb injury during the game, and I think they only threw it 10 times, like, going into the third quarter. It was pretty far into the game. It was either after halftime or, like, at the end of the third quarter, and Aaron Rodgers had only thrown 10 passes. And that there was an idea that, okay, this is a running team that does well, you know, when they feed their running backs and they, you know, they pound the ball. But then their big plays were, like I just said, like, Christian Watson had 3 touchdowns. So, you know, you don't get 3 touchdowns as a receiver if you're, you know, if you aren't passing the ball. So I don't know if they finally found their complementary football, or if there's a disagreement on what they should be going into it, because that's been the prevailing theory for why they've struggled so much. And then Aaron Rodgers and LaFleur got into it on the sideline when they were going into overtime. And there were some very beneficial calls in that game towards the Packers. Like, one in particular, like, the judge told the wide receiver to scoot up, like, an extra foot, and the wide receiver said, okay, and he checked with the official, and he said he was good, and then the official immediately threw the flag and said that he was lined up offsides, like, which
I
is...
I saw that. What was that?
Yeah, which is about as screwy as you can get. And there were a lot of other things in that game that were just bad officiating, like, you know, not NFL rigged or anything, but the Packers are the team... The Packers and the Cowboys are historically the teams that get the biggest advantages in I think it's the Steelers. The Steelers and the Packers are the teams that get the most advantages in penalties called and all that kind of stuff. So that is sort of interesting. But, you know, like, we'll Mike Vrabel's not going to, you know, care about that, and we shouldn't either. But just the teams on paper, you know, the Titans defense has been... I know the 49ers technically rank higher, but it's hard for me to see another defense playing better than the Titans are, like, against the run. And then it's just, can you limit the explosive plays? Can you take advantage of how aggressive Aaron Rodgers is going to be with the pass? Like, can you make those kinds of impact plays in the passing game? And I believe the Titans have an interception in something like 4 or 5 streak. They have a long streak of interceptions, which is, you know, a great thing to have. They had their most sacks that they've ever had under Vrabel, and they did it without Bud Dupree or Jeffrey Simmons or, you know, Harold Landry, whoever. They did that and Danico Autry didn't have a sack, and that was on Sunday. So everything seems to be firing on all cylinders now. So in a cold game, if you're going to say which running game is better and, you know, which team do you feel more comfortable slugging it out, I think you would have to give that advantage to the Titans. But they've got to do their part too and not give up any of those easy explosive plays or anything like that, because the Cowboys had the whole thing like hemmed up. I mean, they were up 14 points, I believe, in the fourth quarter, and they still found a way to lose.
Yeah, hopefully it's time to get some of these players back. Hopefully Christian Fulton is back. I think that'll be important to limit Christian Watson and Alan Lazard. So we'll see what happens there. I feel like this is a good matchup for the Titans just because the Packers want to run the ball. You know, they like getting Aaron Jones the ball when they can, and they like mixing in A.J. Dillon as well, especially now that we're getting into the colder months. But the Titans' run defense is absurd. Like, it's they hold, like, every team to, like, two and a half yards per carry. It's actually unprecedented. And teams, like, have completely quit trying to run the ball on them. And I don't know if the Packers are going to try that. I don't know what their game plan is going to be specifically. Maybe they'll try to air it out because they saw it lead to success against the Cowboys. But I feel like Shane Bowen should and will know what's coming and should devise a good game plan, especially considering the Packers' offense really just hasn't been good all season. It was really only that game against the Cowboys, and it feels a little bit fluky. You know what's interesting? I'm looking at our no nonsense notes. I'm looking at some of these over-unders that we did before the season. Some of those are looking pretty terrible, but I'm also looking at the Titans' schedule that we kind of went out and predicted. We thought they would be 6-3 by now, so pretty predictable Titans. We did have this next game with the Packers coming up as a loss, but that's when we thought the Packers were going to be like an NFC juggernaut, and that has not been the case at all. And I do think the Titans are probably a better team at this point in time. I don't know if that'll matter in this game, but like I said, I really do like how the Titans match up against this team, especially on offense. I know we've talked so much about how bad Todd Downing is and how Derrick Henry just had a really bad game, but if there's a game for Henry to break out of a slump, it's this one. The Packers have a pretty terrible run defense. Teams have run on them at will. Tony Pollard just had a really big game against them, and every team that they've come up against just has had a lot of success on the ground, and that's the Titans' MO. That's what they want to do. Add to that the Packers just last week lost Rashawn Gary to season-ending injury. Devondre Campbell was out for this Packers game, for this Cowboys game, and I'm not sure if he's going to play in this one. If he doesn't, like, wheels up for Derrick Henry in the running game.
Yeah, and I think one of their corners is hurt, and I think their rookie from Georgia also got hurt. I don't know how bad. As I was listening to the game coming back, I heard that
he's on IR. He's on IR now.
Who Stokes. Is? Stokes.
Eric Stokes.
Oh, yeah, Stokes, yeah. And then, but the defensive lineman, Walker, I think is his name, Quay Walker, he got hurt, and I thought we were going to get – we're recording this on Monday, obviously. I thought we would get estimated practice reports or whatever, but we did not. So I don't know what that means, but I didn't hear anything about them putting anybody on IR or anything like that. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, like they're a pretty banged up team, just like the Titans are. And the difference is they're not, you know, not that they're not used to it. They've had Bakhtiari go in and out. Like they've had injuries, but like, I don't think anybody is as accustomed to injuries or more prepared to deal with them than the Titans are, unfortunately. So yeah, I mean, if you can get Derrick Henry running full speed north and south, like, and they're professionals. I don't know how much they really care about it, but this is the team that when they were really rolling, what was it, in 2020, we were talking about earlier, that Sunday night game where, like, they were really rolling and it was the Titans, like, are the Titans really the best team? You know, can they compete for the one seed, blah, blah, blah. And then it was that snow game and they just got manhandled by the Packers. Like, that was an unfun thing to watch. So it may have been last year. I don't remember actually, but it, regardless of when it was one of those things where it was one of those, they can get some respect if they win this game, and then they got trounced and it was never close and it was not fun to watch. So there's a lot of those same guys, I think, on the team, and especially Mike Vrabel, who you don't have to do anything to rile him up and make him feel like an underdog. But if there is something to actually point to, it'll fuel him and he can maybe get his guys going a little bit harder. And it also helps that this isn't a trap game. Like, this isn't a team that lost six straight. They're a team that basically trap gamed the Cowboys last week. So, you know, there shouldn't be any overlooking and there shouldn't be any, you know, pointing down the road or anything like that. So hopefully everything goes well. And, you know, if the Titans play their game, I have a hard time, especially if they played like they did against Kansas City on offense and defense, but with Tannehill in, like, I have a hard time seeing them losing this game, even though I think it will be competitive and close.
Yeah, I will say I think it's a bit of a toss-up because anything can happen with this Titans team, as we've seen, and they really they love playing close games. It is what it is. So I do think it'll be close for most of the night. But like I said, I think the Titans are a slightly better team right now, and they should win, but, you know, anything can happen in Green Bay, and maybe Rodgers turns back the time for a second straight week. So we'll see. Let's take one more ad break here, and then we'll wrap up with Stop the Nonsense. So just as soon as we stopped recording the podcast, the Titans injury report, or estimated injury report. Wait, is it estimated? I actually don't know.
Yeah, it's an estimated. It says that they held a walkthrough.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, so it's just.
Oh yeah, you're right. It says estimated walkthrough held. Okay, so just going through it real quick, so we can update you guys on that. The biggest names that did not practice are Bud Dupree, obviously Caleb Farley, who we talked about, Cody Hollister. Mike Vrabel is going to be really upset about that one. Lonnie Johnson, Ben Jones with a concussion. Which is new and probably not good news, probably not going to get cleared in time with the protocol. And then Jeffrey Simmons, also DNP with that ankle. In terms of limited, we have Danico Autry and Derrick Henry with not injury related. So that just seems like load management, veteran days off. Aaron Brewer with a toe, Christian Fulton with a hamstring. Limited, I think, is good news for him. David Long, Roger McCreary, Elijah Molden with a groin, and then Kevin Strong and Ryan Tannehill, and then full participation, Amani Hooker, so he should be back. What stands out to you from those designations?
Yeah, so the concussion is the really, really weird one, because as far as I know, Ben Jones finished the game. So unless I missed that somehow, that's a new thing that's popped up. If there's some sort of symptoms of concussion, there's no way Mike Vrabel is going to let him practice. In fact, the fact that he's on this list at all, like Mike Vrabel, I can't think of a single time that somebody's been listed on an injury report with a concussion and has played the following game, even if it was on a Sunday. So that sort of puts the Titans in a tailspin, because now you're talking about, do you bring in Levin or do you put Brewer at center and then move Raidens to left guard? So I don't know.
That's what I was thinking. But Raidens,
I would assume Levin.
Has he practiced at left guard? I feel like it's all been right guard for him.
He practiced. He practiced at left guard in the preseason. That's where he spent the entire third preseason game was at left guard. I could be wrong.
Oh, you're right. Actually, yeah, you're right. Because I remember him getting out on some screen passes. Also, he looked pretty athletic doing it.
Because he did right tackle and left guard this preseason, if I remember correctly, and then he's played right guard and left tackle in actual NFL games, just to further muck up any sort of development he could have. So I'm gonna guess just penciling Corey Levin there at center, just because he seems like that, like that seems like an easy plug and play on a short week, like rather than switch two guys. Farley, we already know. Hollister, who cares? Dupree and Jeffrey Simmons both didn't play or both didn't practice. I would not assume that they would practice. I don't assume Simmons will practice either way. Like, regardless, I think he'll just be a game time decision either way. Dupree, I think maybe we watch what he does on Tuesday and then on Wednesday. Hooker full participation is huge because I can't imagine they'd let him full participate and then pull him back. Like, we'll know by tomorrow, because if they pulled him back tomorrow, then he's not playing. Like, it's a setback. But otherwise, going
it would have been limited if he was even sort of questionable.
Yeah, that, because that's what they did with Torrey Carter too, where they gave him full participation after not playing. So then the fact that Roger McCreary and all the corners are on there, but the fact that Roger McCreary, Elijah Molden, and Christian Fulton are all listed as limited, as well as David Long, makes me think that they're fine. Like, that, not that they're fine, but that they're trending towards playing. Like, I would assume that there's degrees of injury with those guys. I don't think McCreary is injured enough, unless it's something that popped up today. I don't think he's injured enough to where it was noticeable in the game. And then Molden left the game, but the fact that he's doing limited instead of being held out like Lonnie Johnson or, you know, some of the other guys up there, I would assume that he's okay. David Long with a knee injury, like I said, you know, that it was weird. It could not tell what was wrong with him when he was going out of the game. Like, I couldn't tell if it was a shoulder stinger, if it was a hand. And I watched him on the sideline. He didn't limp or walk funny. So, I mean, maybe he's okay and it's just some soreness and you just went knee to knee or something. But I don't know. Like, but again, the fact that they're limited seems to indicate a good thing, because there's no reason for these guys to do anything if they aren't going to play. Like, all these guys who've been starting all these games, that you don't need them to go through walkthroughs. Like, they could, you know, they could sit just like Simmons or Bud Dupree if they were going to sit. Also, Randy Bullock didn't practice, so, you know, whatever that's
weird. I was going to mention that. Who would even be? I don't even know who they would call.
Like, I'm not crazy. He kicked on Sunday, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I'm guessing he just caught a cramp in his calf, and they're just resting him because he's listed as right calf, which I'm assuming means Charlie horse. But yeah. So
the DNP though. Probably means he's not going to play, right?
But like in a walkthrough, like. You know,
yeah, I don't know
how much do you need, like, how much do you need your kicker to practice during a walkthrough? But because it could have just been an hour walkthrough, then get back, and because it could have been in the facility, we don't know. But I guess we'll watch that as we go forward. But yeah, right now I would say that Ben Jones won't play, and that'll be a pretty significant loss for them. But that Jeffrey Simmons and Bud Dupree are still up in the air. And then I tentatively want to say that I would imagine that this will be the first time that we see all five starting defensive backs, with Amani Hooker and the three corners, and then Kevin Byard not even listed on the injury report. So we'll see. You know, Aaron Rodgers did not practice during their walkthroughs with a right thumb injury. You know, we talked about that. I don't know if we're putting this before or after, so I'm just going to pretend that we're doing that. We're going to put this to the front. And later you'll hear us talk a little bit about Aaron Rodgers and his thumb and all that. So, but they didn't have any practice. They didn't even have a walkthrough. So that's all made up. So the two guarantees that we have basically are Ben Jones not playing, Amani Hooker is playing. Everything else is speculation, and that's just kind of how it's trending.
That is correct. And just to go through the DMPs for the Packers, even though, like you said, they didn't even have a practice, so I don't know how much to take into this. But Bakhtiari, who I don't think he's practiced all season. Elgton Jenkins, who has a high-profile name, but he's actually been terrible this year. So I don't know if that's even a loss for them. Romeo Dubs isn't going to play, as a high ankle sprain. Shamar Jean Charles, another cornerback, is injured for them. And then Devondre Campbell, who we talked or will talk about, depending on where we put this segment. He's DMP also, so he's probably not going to play. So both teams are pretty banged up. And yeah, it is what it is. That's how it is in the NFL at this point in time. Welcome back into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. Will, do you want to kick us off with your Stop the Nonsense?
Yeah, I kind of already touched on it, and you know, I won't beat a dead horse too much, but there was a specific quote that kind of got me riled up, and I tweeted about it, and I got interactions on Twitter for it. But when Paul Kaharsky, who not a friend of the podcast, when he asked Mike Vrabel if he's pleased with the offensive coordinator, like with how the offense is doing, basically, you know, Mike Vrabel is very dismissive. And I look, 9 times out of 10, I think that's funny. And I think that's a great thing to do to Kaharsky, because he's going to, if you give him an inch of leeway in what he's going to write about, he'll tear you down and he'll find a way to spin it negative, all that kind of stuff. But Mike Vrabel said a lot of like things that like trigger red flags, right? So one of the things was, as he said, you know, the offensive coordinator's job is to get the play to the play caller, meaning the quarterback, and then after that, it's up to the players to execute. Which that's not the job of an offensive coordinator. That's the job of the headset. The offensive coordinator should be the one who is picking out the right plays and the correct plays to manipulate situations to your advantage. So that was a frustrating thing. And he proceeded to kind of shoo it off and do one of his favorite party tricks, which is to muddle where the blame should go. And it's like, well, you know, we're not blocking well enough. We're not throwing well enough. We're not catching well enough. We're not running well enough. We're not calling plays well enough. And it's like, okay, I understand that you have to say something to that effect, but it's so, and again, I'm going to get myself worked up, but look, your response to that cannot be, any time that the play gets to the quarterback in time, that's a successful play call. Like that can't be it. Like, even if you're going to lie, hold yourself to a higher standard and lie better than that. You know, like, just Mike Vrabel doesn't feel like he owes the fans anything, and he doesn't. Like, I mean, we're not out, you know, we boo when he makes bad calls. We boo when he doesn't throw the challenge flag when he's supposed to. Like, that fans do that. Like, that they don't, you know, they'll turn on you as soon as you stop winning games. Like, that's, he doesn't, as long as he's doing what he thinks is best and he's winning, that's cool, because we won't save him if, you know, if he's on the way out, like, you know. But he takes this teammates over everything and we're family and we got each other's back. He takes that too far. Like, you can't have accountability in a situation where nobody is held accountable when they do things wrong. Like, if there's a long pass play and you ask Jeffrey Simmons, you know, what happened on that play? He'll say, you know, I just didn't do a good enough job getting upfield and getting to the quarterback. That's fine. But the coach can't say, well, Jeffrey Simmons didn't do a good enough job getting to the quarterback. You've got, like, and if you do, you have to do something in the back to address it. And at this point, when it comes to the offense and using Chigakonkwo, like we talked about earlier, the continued use of Dennis Daly, which nobody can figure out, the substitutions at running back that are so frequent now, the Cody Hollister snaps, like all of these things, like, I don't believe that he is actually holding Todd Downing accountable. And while it's easy to say, well, he doesn't really mean that, he's just messing with Karski, my problem is that his actions show that he does mean that and he does not understand better, and that he is taking up for Todd Downing and doubling down yet again on this bad decision that he made. And that is where my problem with it is. And so that's my stop the nonsense, is just, I'm tired of him saying the coach speak, but then not doing the coach's job of fixing it.
I feel like people are going to just call us Mike Vrabel haters after this podcast, but
yeah, I mean, he's a good coach.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's like we're not Mike Vrabel haters. He's a good head coach. Like,
we're kind of haters.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, we're truthers. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like the best this team has been on offense is with Arthur Smith, and the worst this team has been on defense is with Mike Vrabel calling the defense. And the reason I say that is because when Mike Vrabel removes himself from the play calling and all that, and has a competent offensive coordinator and a competent defensive coordinator, he can do the other stuff. He can do the culture stuff. He can do the motivation. He can do the keeping every, like, he seems to be able to keep people accountable enough. Like, but when he doesn't have somebody who knows what they're doing as the offensive coordinator, or I guess as the defensive coordinator, we hadn't really seen that much, then the floor falls out and you get the 32nd ranked offense in the NFL. Like that, you know, and that's what you get. Like, he's never going to add anything schematically to a team. He doesn't have it. Whether it's he's never focused long enough on one side of the ball, and that, like, he knows everything. That's great. He can't call plays on defense to save his life. He's been part of the two times he's been in charge, they've been the worst two defenses in the NFL. Like, he's a terrible defensive play caller, and I've seen nothing to suggest he knows offense. But that shouldn't be his job. Like, he's not Andy Reid. That's just not who he is. He is just a different kind of guy, and that's okay. You just have to work around that.
Yeah. I mean, he's an elite motivator, and the players love him. I think he's what everyone wants Dan Campbell to be, but he's actually that, and he's has proven success with it. I thought of a conspiracy theory as we were just talking. What if Mike Vrabel is actually the one calling plays on offense? Because it would make sense, right? He was so bad at doing it on defense, yeah. He relinquishes the duties to Shane Bowen, and then all of a sudden the defense is great again. Imagine if he's the one who has the reins on the offense, and that's why all this is happening. I don't actually think that's happening.
No, I've watched him on the sidelines when he's just kind of pacing and, like, his microphone and, like, facing the wrong way and stuff. Like, I mean, although that could be. That looks like how the offense is called, so maybe he is, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked to him about it in the past. Like, he loves playing the victim, playing the adversity card. So all of this, like the injuries, having the worst offense in the league, this is his wet dream, man. This is his shining moment, and he's getting it. I hope it ends up in better playoff success than the past couple of seasons, but until that happens, I don't know. We're okay to criticize when it's warranted. I mean, and like I said, that like we're gonna be labeled Mike Vrabel haters, but we call out everyone who plays bad or coaches bad. We used to call out Derrick Henry, our king. We used to call him out. Yes.
We've called out everybody. Like, when you do your job poorly. Yeah, we're not gonna gloss over it. Like, we called out.
We've
John
done
Robinson
it with Robinson.
When he drafted,
yeah, exactly. That's
when he drafted Isaiah Wilson. We all hated that. Like, I mean, we made fun of it. Like, I wrote an article like the day it happened, giving him like a D-. And the only reason I said the only reason I give him a D- is because at least there's a place like for him to play on the offensive line. I've been harsh when it's warranted on everybody, because when it sucks, I know it's going to suck for years, or at the very least for a full season. Like, there should be no reprieve. But the problem is, if you don't go with the groupthink and you try to bring up something where the current's going the other way, everybody just like freaks out and loses their mind.
Yeah, for sure. No one is safe from our wrath. So for my stop the nonsense, I want to talk a little bit about the Arizona Cardinals front office, because we all know what happened in the offseason with Kyler Murray, that clause that says he had to study for 4 hours a week on the side because he like would show up to games unprepared or whatever. They also extended him, even though they felt that way about him. They gave him like $200 million guaranteed or something like that. They also extended Cliff Kingsbury, who had proven to be a pretty not great head coach. And we all know all that happened. And then today, super weird, they released Eno Benjamin, from weeks 1 to 5, he played, I looked this up, he played 34% of the offensive snaps as James Conner's like direct backup / change of pace guy. And he looked really good, very good pass catcher out of the backfield. Week 6 to 8, James Conner gets injured. He plays 78% of their snaps, gets 47 touches while Conner is out. And then on Sunday this week, he plays one offensive snap and then gets released by the Cardinals. Nothing has happened. There have been no reports that he violated anything. He even, like, came out. I saw a tweet, and he was surprised by the decision as well. Nothing seems to have gone into this other than they think he's not good. But all of the metrics, I think he's, like, second in rushing yards after contact or over expected or something like that. I can't really remember the specific stat, but I've seen him play. I think he's been pretty dynamic as a pass catcher and a change of pace back. So super weird. I don't know what the Cardinals are doing. This is the same team that a couple weeks ago traded for Robbie Anderson. Robbie Anderson this past week played 8 snaps. 2 weeks before that, he played 7 snaps. and it's already been 4 weeks since he's acclimated to the offense. This front office, I mean, we want to talk bad about John Robinson and the Titans front office. This is what a really bad front office does, and it just makes no sense. This Eno Benjamin situation is weird. We don't need a backup running back because Dontrell Hilliard is really good in that role, but teams are probably going to be lining up to sign him once available.
Yeah, that was so weird. And, like, it was like Schefter tweeted it as, like, a little bit of a surprise here. And then everybody was like, whoa, that's really weird. And it just didn't make any sense. Like, I don't know if he's, like, just pretending that it's a surprise. And he's like, I can't believe they cut me. Because otherwise it just doesn't make any sense. Like, maybe he told them.
It would be like the Titans cutting Dontrell Hilliard mid-season.
Yeah. Yeah.
So weird.
Like, the only difference is all I can imagine is he was like, hey, like, I want maybe a bigger part of the offense. I feel like I can help. And they're like, this guy's demanded too much. We got to get him out of here. Like, and it's like, okay. Or, like, maybe he beat, like, Kyler Murray in Call of Duty and just, like, it, like, he kept showing him up and, like, his KD ratio was higher or something. I don't know.
By the way, I don't know if you saw the game that Colt McCoy started, but they scored 27 points. And everyone on Twitter is like, Moore,
like, came alive. Like, everybody's like, whoa, it turns out that this offense can function. And it's like, now what do you like? That's the worst thing. Like, that was my fear when Malik Willis came in, is that they would have, which was stupid looking back, that they would have a good game plan on how to use his legs and that everybody would buy in. And then as soon as teams counterpunched, it would be like, oh, well, Malik Willis should still start or Tannehill should start. Like, just it would be like a civil war. And luckily that didn't happen. Because Malik is a good player, but he needs time. But, like, now if you're a Cardinals fan, what are you thinking? Like, are you thinking, hey, maybe we can get, like, a Russell Wilson-type trade deal and be right back in this? Because – or are you thinking, we need a new – like, we need a new head coach because this obviously doesn't – like, I don't know what you do. Because now we're at a point where we know the marriage between those two probably isn't the best. Like, they've gotten into arguments on the sideline before, and they don't really seem to complement each other, like, in terms of game plan. So it's like, I don't know what you do.
They're in a really bad position, and they put themselves in this position. So I don't feel any sympathy whatsoever for that organization. But Kyler just, he's not it, man. Like, I don't think he's a franchise quarterback. I think he's an average to above average quarterback, but within the structure of the offense, Colt McCoy genuinely looked better for them. And I don't know if that's like a long-term thing. I don't know if he could do that every week, week in, week out, or this was just a really good 1 week game plan thing. But man,
I mean, it feels like they're the New York Giants, like, of 2021. Like, it feels like they're the team that, like, you have a guy who you're committed to and your quarterback. And maybe if you make a change, it'll work. But the problem is, like, Kyler Murray has never put together a season like – not that Daniel Jones is awesome, but, like, they've never been consistent winners, like, this late in the year. Like, I think they started fading even before this last year. And so it's like they always fade when it starts to get colder and when you get to November and all that. And, like, can you invest in a quarterback like that? Like, I don't know. That I mean, like, they already have, but, I mean, like – can you commit to that guy long term, or are you, like, looking for a way out already?
I don't know. I don't know what team would trade assets for him either. Like, they already have to pay him a huge contract. That's really bad position for the Cardinals, and they're not making it better with some of these moves that they're making. Very, very concerning situation now in Arizona. So thankfully the Titans aren't the Cardinals, and I think we can all agree that we're happy with that. That'll do it for us this week. Excited to watch the Titans on Thursday Night Football. I know we've lost both of our primetime games this year, but they were against really good AFC teams. Although the Bills look kind of terrible right now. I don't know what's going on with them. But hopefully the Titans could come out with a win on Thursday Night Football, show the national media that the fighting Mike Vrabels are a force to be reckoned with in the NFL. And would be good just to beat Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, to be honest with you. I'm not liking what's going on with them. Their vibes are off. So hopefully the Titans could win, and we'll be back next week to recap that one. For Matias, for Will, thank you for tuning in, and remember to always stop the nonsense.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.